Blog Talk Radio.
Get into a lot of information, and if you could, for
just the listeners who are tuning in for the first time, we're always getting new listeners, just share why we're even looking at the Asante, and maybe give a brief overview of what brought us to this point today, where we'll be talking about the social aspect.
Okay. Well, back in 1982, the Asante Society was introduced to one of the paramount kings of the Asante nation, Nana Koko Sarpong, who was here in the U.S. representing the king of the Asante nation at that time, who was Atumfo Pokuwai II. And his express purpose was to build a liaison with people in the African-American community, those who were looking for, involved with, interested in building a relationship with a traditional society on the other side. And since the Sarasota Society is organized around the model of the divine kingship, which has been the preferred model for social organization for African people since, you know, before recorded history, we were very interested in making this liaison, making this linkage, and based on the relationship that has evolved, I decided that I wanted to do some further research, actually a thesis, using the Asante model as a focus of the thesis, and comparing that, linking it, making linkages as much as possible with the Assyrian model that, you know, I've been practicing for the past 40 years. So
okay. What
we've been discussing is the basically the information that I was able to pull together as a part of this thesis project that has been submitted to the University of Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology in Kumasi, Ghana.
Excuse me, brother. Your levels are a little low. Could you speak up just a little bit?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
So the thesis has been submitted to the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology in Kumasi, Ghana,
mm-hmm.
as a PhD and a PhD candidate based on this work here. So we've been discussing there are five basic research questions that I looked at, all of which centered around looking at the Asante as a model for sustainable development of self and community, politically, socially, economically, environmentally, and then also looking to see whether or not the model has principles or practices that could be of value to people who are not Asante, people in
mm-hmm.
other cultures and other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been discussing the last couple of weeks the first research question, which was the political model as a political, a sustainable model for political development.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight we'll get into this, looking at it from a social perspective. And throughout, we're looking at the spirituality of it because, you know, historically, traditionally, in Africa, it's impossible to separate spirituality from man's life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like the Western man who has this false premise that, you know, God is effective and important and valuable and the sustainer and all of that and everything except for government, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, the most important part of people's lives, how we socially organize and work together cooperatively
mm-hmm.
To move forward as a group. And I can understand why they do it and have done it because of their confusion and disjointedness about what is God and how to make that work. But fortunately, our African brothers and sisters didn't have that kind of confusion traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
It has been introduced because of the colonial period of Western influences of Western ideas of Christianity and Islam coming into Africa. But traditionally, African people throughout Africa, through many societies, I've understood that, you know, God is the source of all being, is the source of all life, and therefore is the focal point, has to be the focal point of man's cooperative activities together.
Okay.
And so, and it's from that perspective that the divine kingship has served as a vehicle which promotes the harmonious and peaceful relationships that are conducive to human welfare and prosperity. Because if we're all here to serve one God, if we're all here as expressions of one divinity, then how can we be at odds with one another and not function in a harmonious way? To function as such would be a violation of our pact with the Supreme Being. If God created us all and put us all here to cooperative work together, then and set up a system, put the hierarchy together to ensure the continued evolution and development of the society, and we don't do our part to promote and maintain that development of society, then in essence we're sinning against God, we're violating against God. So that's been the principle of not just the Asante, but we find that same principle concept in many societies. And in fact, you know, society, there's a concept of as above, so below. And as there is a hierarchy above, so the hierarchy is included below. And there's an intersection between these two hierarchies. So from the African perspective, God is always at the top. And then depending on the different traditions, you will have either the divine spirits, the so-called divinities or angels or archangels, whatever term you want to use. And then you may have the ancestors, then you may have the humans. Well, amongst the people of Kemet, we have a parallel hierarchy, meaning this is the Supreme Being, but the Supreme Being has two aspects to his being. One is consciousness, and the other is spirit. So as it comes down into manifestation, then the consciousness part of the Supreme Being will manifest itself through the ancestors and then into humans, et cetera, as humans are hierarchically arranged as well. But the spirit part of the human being would manifest itself through the principal spirits, the angels, archangels, whatever term you want to use, and then to lesser spirits, et cetera. So we have this two-tier peer parallel system of organization. But we're not mattering irresponsible or irreflective of which particular pattern a society will have. In Africa, you always have this God to top, and then the divinities or the ancestors, and then coming down. And all of this is put in place because this is the design, the divine design, through which man is to be able to experience and cultivate the divinity, which is his being, is the essence of our being. As we said before, each of us comes to earth with the express purpose of awakening the divinity within us to become a God man or a God woman. And so the spiritual forces, the angels, archangels, and the terus, we refer to them in Kemet, are the spirit side of God's body and man's body. Those are the spirit is the vehicle of expression. So if I'm going to become something, I have to become it through the expression and manipulation of energy, which is what we call spirit. And so, and energy works on different levels. So as I identify what it is I need to do, if I can tap into the energy on that particular level, that's what gives me the force to manifest, to make real that which I seek to accomplish. And so we have this understanding that energy, spirit are hierarchically arranged, each of which is designed, programmed to give a certain level of expression and experience. And then the ancestors, those who preceded us, are there to help guide the community and give us insight into the kinds of things that we need to do to move forward and help us move forward, because it's in their interest, because as the Asante say and as it's said in ancient Kemet, you know, people have to be reborn back into the world. And no one wants to be born into chaos and confusion. Everybody wants to be born into a harmonious, peaceful environment. And so it's upon the living to take what the ancestors gave us, use the spiritual forces that our ancestors have cultivated or used as a part of our divine nature to create this environment of peace and prosperity and joy so that everyone can work through their spiritual challenges to become the God men and God women, which is our destiny.
You know, as you just stated, the last few statements that you just made, you know, to, you know, realizing our destiny, which is to become a God man or a God woman, I think that that is so important just to the discussion, because there has to be a system in place that addresses the social needs of the people. But, and again, just for the sake of this discussion, I mean, the bottom line is the base from which everything we're talking about is being built is the fact that we are divine by nature. We are divine beings, and realizing that divinity is the goal. So then having a system in place whereby you can now construct a society based upon these spiritual principles that lead to that end of us becoming divine men and divine women is so important, because we look at certain societies, and in the absence of such a system, you can just look and see the chaos. I mean, even when you see when you look at the youth, you know, just running rampant, running, you know, just crazy or whatever. So, I mean, if you could just even speak to this, the importance of having such a system in place, with the foundation being that we come to Earth to realize our divinity, and that starting from that point and moving outward, we can, in fact, construct a society based on spiritual principles that help lead us to the end of us realizing our divinity.
Yes, so that's what the divine kingship is. It's the system which establishes responsibility for promoting and preserving society to allow for individuals to grow and develop to their fullness. So the social structure within the society has various levels, because each level provides a different level of responsibility to those persons for the overall upkeep and promotion of the society. So the king within the Asante model, for example, so the king, the Asante Hini, is responsible for overall providing this environment for all of the people. And then, hierarchically speaking, you have the queen mother, who is on her track, parallel track, and then you have the chiefs and the queen mothers of the different paramountcies and sub-chiefs of different villages, etc. All of these persons are put in positions of authority with the responsibility of preserving the peace and the harmony within society, because that's what gives the ability for the individuals to develop to their level. So you have, traditionally, you have a hierarchical, a vertical, a horizontal, I should say, stratification within society, which would be the king, queen mother on one level, and then coming down the paramount kings and the chiefs and sub-chiefs and members of different parts of society coming down, male and female. And then that the kingship model then allows for individuals, based on where they are, to evolve or develop and grow and take on higher levels of responsibility. So a person might come into the world historically in ancient times, well, olden times, there was slaves within society. But the slaves were not, and this is important. This is an important point we need to distinguish,
mm-hmm.
because we often hear people when they're arguing against African Americans receiving compensation for, you know, the slave enslavement period here in the U.S. That well, they were slaves in Africa. They were sold by their own people into slavery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's a different, we're using the word slavery to describe two different realities. In that, in the African sense, a so-called slave did not lose their human rights. As we discussed in the political part of the discussion, that there were situations where slaves were promoted to some of the highest positions within the Asante community. So you, even though you might have been a quote-unquote slave, you were still a human being, and you still had the potential through your own effort and work to improve your lot, which is quite different from the chattel slavery that our ancestors experienced over here, where you were made as a piece of property, not a human being, but property. In many cases treated worse than animals were actually treated. So it's a deficiency within the concept that we're using the same term to talk about two different realities.
Okay.
One, we're talking about humans who are on a certain social level, which could be, which they could evolve through their efforts and go beyond. And the other, we're talking about people who were treated as property, who are always to be property, whose descendants were treated as property, and could be abused, et cetera, had no rights as human beings. So we have this horizontal stratification within society, but we also have a vertical stratification within society. And the vertical stratification was through what the Indian Khan system are called the Busuwa, which are the family lines or the clans. So you have eight within the Asante model. You have eight maternal clans, which are based on your blood, your mother's, your relationship to your mother, so it's a bloodline maternally. And then they have 12 paternal clans. And these 12 paternal clans were, you got your bloodline from your mother, but you got, quote-unquote, your sumsum, or your spiritual essence from your father. Now, I think last week we talked about this concept of a sumsum in relationship to what the Chinese call qi, or qi,
yes.
What in Kama was called Kaibit, or it's an aspect of Ra. Ra is the generic term in Kama for spirit or energy, but there are seven different levels of spirit or energy expression. And the Kaibit is that which is analogous to what's called the vital energy or the qi of the qi or of the Chinese. But you see, you have the same kind of concept within the Chinese system, where you have qi that you get from your environment, right? From things you eat, things you drink, etc. But you also have this thing called prenatal qi, which is passed to you from your parents. So this idea of the entoral spirit or the paternal clan, where the sumsum or the qi is passed from the father to the offspring, we find a linkage, another linkage there with other traditions. So this vertical stratification then gives us, within a particular community, you have these eight maternal clans and these 12 paternal clans, which means that in one way or another, people are connected to one another. Right, there's going to be eight vertical maternal clans, which are going to be, and some of those people, same people, will be a part of these 12 clans. But that's what gives you the stratification within communities. So within each and every community, you will have family members, quote unquote, this is what's become so-called the extended family, in every community within the Santi. So no matter where you go within the nation, you're going to find, quote unquote, brothers and sisters there who are of your family, of your clan.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates this cohesion throughout the community. Same thing with the paternal clans. You're going to find people, wherever you go within the nation, you're going to find people that you don't even know who are considered your brother because of this clan structure.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have within the many African societies these age sets, which are people who are in the same age group who might, a good analogy would be go to school together, right? So you have your sophomores, your juniors, your seniors, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So as you migrate through life's evolutions together, you become brothers, and you share with one another based on the brotherhood of being at the same age. So you have all these intersections within the society, which creates family or bonds across the society on hierarchical levels, vertically and horizontally. And so that's what promotes, again, the peace and stability and the need for cooperation within the community, because ultimately, you know, everyone becomes a part of this one nation, and the intersections are many.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. And I can really see how a family bond is promoted just with all of the different, just connections that people can have paternally, you know, maternally, you know, getting chi from their mother, from their father, I mean, and just, you know, just how the different groups and subcategories, I mean, you know, just people, I could see how even now when we look at how back maybe, I don't know when this term really became popular in the United States, of black African Americans referring to each other as brother or sister, you know. Even as a matter of fact, today we'll use that term to describe somebody that we don't even know, you know. Oh, I saw this sister the other day, or, you know, what were you just trying to describe somebody? Well, what was it? Well, tell me what it looked like. Oh, it was a brother, you know. And you automatically know that they're talking about somebody of the same African-American descent, you know, so I can actually see how a bond can be created, and that seems to have been passed down and carried over just from Africa, you know, coming over from the motherland. If you could talk about, even as it relates to this discussion, talking about the social, the role of, say, a rites of passage even, because I know that you mentioned the sophomore, that you gave an analogy of the, you know, different groups being able to relate to them as we would maybe to give an analogy of like sophomore, junior, senior, whatever. Even as we look at the Asante in traditional Africa, people have heard the term rites of passage. You know, can you talk about the rites of passage and the role that played, the function and the role that played as we're talking about the social model of the Asante?
Well, the rites of passage programs are similar to their reflections of the age group thing that we were just discussing, in
mm-hmm.
that they were these were programs that individuals who were of the same age were transitioned through at the same time in order to cultivate skills for future function within the society. Men were taught the skills of whatever the economy or the economies of that particular community might be, as well as parenting skills and father skills and husband skills. And women were taught, you know, how to be women and wives and mothers, etc. And in many traditional societies, you know, if a person didn't complete this process, they weren't able or allowed to marry within the community. Because,
mm-hmm.
see, the problem is, and this is the real the significant understanding. Over here, if you want to be a doctor, practice medicine, you have to go through some training, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through training, years, certification, pass tests, and get some kind of documentation from another authority who is recognized as someone who can certify that you know what you're doing
mm-hmm.
before you can practice here. If you want to be an engineer, you got to do the same thing. You got to go through this process. You want to be a social worker, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to work within this system, this Western political system, you have to be trained. But there is no training required to be a husband. There is no training required to be a wife. There is no training required to be a father. There is no training required to be a mother. There's no training required to be a brother. There's no training required to be a grandparent. I mean, the most important roles and functions, the things that can keep and maintain societal social peace and harmony,
mm-hmm.
there's no requirement for that. But in African societies, they understood and understand, because even though many of them, because of the certain practices within the system, as they began to adopt Christianity and Islamic spiritual systems, began to move away from the traditional systems. Even today, many of them are going back, trying to reestablish these models, these rites of passage programs, these traditional societies. Because they see and understand that the society today is not as stable, not as functional, not as peaceful, not as harmonious as it was when these programs were in place. And there's big challenges that many of the leaders that I interviewed are having, because, you know, within those who are Christian, et cetera, there's this idea of you know, fetish or, you know, whatever, where these traditional practices are sinful practices, or these are pagan practices or whatever. These are not the enlightened practices of Christianity. But by the same token, these same Christians are the ones who are getting married and getting divorces and leaving children in these broken situations, simply because there's nothing within that system to cultivate and develop and protect and produce a quality
mm-hmm.
husband, a quality wife. So the communities are going back and reinstituting, reformulating, reestablishing, and the parents of these younger people, the people in their 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, they see the value of it. Because they're looking at what's going on, and they understand that, hey, we got to do something, because
mm-hmm.
our generation is being lost. The young people are fighting it because they're believing that it's against Christian beliefs or whatever. So, you know, these rites of passage programs were critical to maintaining the peace and the harmony within society. And it's the leadership's role, the king, the queen mothers, the chiefs, et cetera's role, to promote and protect the practices, the traditional practices, and the stability of the community. So we talk about social development, a sustainable social model. Many of the leaders that I talked to as a part of this research have begun to go back and begin to retrain their citizenry to show and educate and move the society back toward a more sustainable model in terms of protecting the family and the social infrastructure, because they've
mm-hmm.
seen that it's just falling apart, it's been destroyed because of the lack of development. Because within the African context, there were these codes of conduct and behavior that were taught within these systems, right, in terms of things that are socially acceptable that you can do as an adult male. As a child, you can do certain things. But as you migrate from childhood into adulthood, there are certain behaviors that have to be left as a child. Mm-hmm. Right? I like to use the analogy of, you know, as a child, if you could have cake every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you would choose that off the menu. You'd get sick of the dog and probably wouldn't have enough sense to stop. But that's the mind of a child, right? Mm-hmm. Give them some broccoli, vegetables. Oh, I don't want that. I don't like that. Whatever, whatever, whatever. So mm-hmm. as an adult, you understand the nutritional value of certain foods and how you have to limit certain other foods. Well, you should understand. But because in our society, there is no system for delineating and distinguishing what it looks like, what adulthood looks like vis-a-vis childhood, then the behaviors and attitudes of the child just get older as the person ages, and mm-hmm. the adult values and practices and insights don't come into play because the child isn't driven out, so to speak. The child isn't educated away. The child isn't put in its place. So you'll have, like, I remember President Bush, the first one, didn't like broccoli, right? Refused to eat broccoli. This is a 60-year-old man. You know, broccoli is one of the most potent, valuable mm-hmm. herbs on the planet in terms mm-hmm. of its anti-cancerous properties, et cetera. And this guy, because he doesn't like it, which is what a child would say, I don't like broccoli, refused to eat it. So there's no process for moving a person from childhood to adulthood in society. I mean, when do you become a child? Or when do you become an adult? Well, if you want to go to a movie, you have to be 12 years old. If you want to take a ride at an amusement park, you have to be 5 foot tall. You know, if you want to drink alcohol, depending on where you are, you might have to be 21, you might be 18. If you want to drive a car, you have to be 16. I mean, there's no standard for what is an adult in this society, whereas in traditional societies, they had not only standards, but they held people to the standard. So if you didn't complete these processes, if you didn't learn these social ethical practices and didn't apply them in your life, then you would not be allowed to participate on certain levels of society. You couldn't be put in a position of responsibility. You couldn't be the president of a country if you didn't have mm-hmm. enough sense to know that broccoli is good for you. It's not going to happen.
You know, I was just having a discussion pretty similar recently. I was speaking with my wife, Akwea Shepsnater, and I was just sharing with her about just pretty much what you were saying about how in the lack of a system, you know, you have people that are running around, like, you know, just to piggyback on what you just shared, as far as people not being grown spiritually, but because of the age limit, they say, okay, you've reached this age, now you're grown, and you have people that are running around and boasting that I'm grown, so I can drink, you know, I can get drunk, you can't tell me what to do, you know what I mean, because I'm grown, you know, and without that system in place by which you can now gauge certain things to determine whether or not you are behaving as someone of your age should behave, then you have, you know, total chaos. That's why I really appreciate the Osiriset Society, you know what I mean, because of there's a system here that people in the West can actually, if you don't have to go all the way back to the motherland to go to the motherland. You know, there's actually a system here that you can actually benefit from and take advantage of if you're interested in a system whereby you can now learn to practice traditions that can actually help, again, with the bottom line and to the end of becoming a divine being and realizing your divinity. There's a system in place now based upon what Brother Orwa is sharing today, traditions that were practiced by the Asante. Brother Orwa, as we're talking, and I don't want to take the conversation in another direction, but you were talking about the hierarchy. You spoke about the kingship and the horizontal hierarchy as well, you know, the queen mothers and the chiefs and the sub, you know, categories. But then breaking it down, what would then be the role of, say, and these, some of these questions are rhetorical, the elders then, you know, even as we look at the society and, you know, the role of family, what would then be the role of the elders as it relates to what it is that their function is in the society and how that relates to the training up of the people that come behind them?
Well, the elders' responsibility is to ensure that those who are coming behind them are given the opportunity and the insight and the guidance necessary to fully develop themselves. They're responsible for oversight of the corporate body, corporate reality, to make sure that the needs and development of the people are ensured. Now, within the clan system, the family system, you have the head of the clan, and the head of the clan, the head of the family, is responsible for making sure that the interests of everyone in that family are protected, and he becomes a part of the advocate for people within his family to within the political system or the kingship model. So everyone in traditional Africa within the kingship model has an advocate within the body of the divine kingship, so that every person can speak, their interests and needs can be communicated to the rulers, the kings, the chiefs, whomever they exist. And when there's when even strangers, for example, within the Santi model, the previous king to the current one established a stool to represent strangers within the community. So if you were moved there or you were just visiting or whatever and you had some issues, then there is a stool or a chief responsible for addressing your issues if they need to be addressed beyond him, even taking them to the king himself. So that's what the kingship model is a model which is set up to ensure social harmony throughout all the strata of the community. And it's the most democratic process because you have a direct representative who's going to look for and promote and communicate your interests. Unlike the false so-called, matter of fact, I read a brief article, it's in some magazine, I forget the name of it. I gotta go back and find it. Mm-hmm. I read a synopsis of it where this guy, this social scientist, is saying that today the U.S. is really an oligarchy, looking at the definition of what an oligarchy is, mm-hmm. which is a system of government where those who have influence, their interests are addressed, as opposed to a democracy where the individual citizens, and even a representative democracy, where the individual citizens' voice is heard via the representatives. You know, what these fools, let me be polite, what these people who call themselves the representatives up to the federal government are doing has nothing at all to do with what the people on the ground are advocating. I mean, it's just poll after poll which says the people believe that so-and-so is happening. But and I'm at a classic point that even out of right now in the news is this whole gun thing, right? The majority of people in this country say that there's a need for more background checks for people owning guns.
Right.
But the representatives, that aren't speaking to the people's desire. They're not representing the people's interests. They're not representing the people's wishes. They're representing the wishes of the NRA or whatever other political interest is out there, whatever corporate interest is out there. So it's not really a democracy, it's an oligarchy that we're operating on. Whereas in the African system, it was a truly democratic system because everyone had a spokesman or a representative that could take their case and promote their interests to the ruling people.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I was just thinking about what you were just sharing, and again, back to, you know, having a system in play that actually teaches people, again, as a foundation, that they are divine and that that's the reason why we're here. Just thinking about the, you know, the statement that you just made about people who are arguing for background checks on people who own guns. Now, that might sound like a good thing. It's not a bad thing. But these same people, if they don't realize that they're divine, they just might want, okay, because I want to be able to go out on Friday night and get drunk and not have to worry about getting mugged when I come home. You know what I mean? So on that, from that perspective, they might be advocating for something that on the surface seems good. But if you don't know why you're here, you know, as a, you know, that the purpose of you being here is a to be a divine being and to move into that realization, then, yeah, you could be advocating for something that's good on the one hand, but, you know, the rest of the other areas of your life, you know, could be in a complete shambles. So, again, back to the system for a second, you know, just that system being in place, you know, there are a lot of people, I'm sure that you know, there are a lot of different groups out here, and as people come into information, you might take a group of people that come into a certain, you know, at some point people run across certain books, certain information, and it inspires them, you know, to take pride in their culture, to look more at their history, and to, you know, start feeling pride in their African heritage. And they may even feel as though, as a result of certain information, that okay, you know, I'm spiritual now. You know, I'm not. They've thrown off the religious titles and labels, and they, you know, don't adhere to a particular system, or even they may claim to. They may claim to. Okay, well, I'm doing the comedic thing now. You know, but might not be necessarily affiliated with, or, you know, into or practicing a particular set of principles that actually are leading them towards their divinity. And in the absence of that system, people are walking around with a lot of head knowledge, but the proof is not there. Could you share with us, brother, what a divine being looks like? You know, I've heard Shechem Meir Netir Hekshemsu Haru say, "You look like God when." Okay, could you share with us, could you pick up on that? Because I think that is important to this discussion. Again, we're talking about the Asante model and what we can get from that model to apply to our lives today. And the bottom line is why we're here. Could you share with us, could you pick up on you look like God when, as it relates to this discussion?
Well, I mean, the long answer to that is... You look like God when you are manifesting the 11 laws within your life. And, you know, the highest law is the law of Amen, or the law of peace. And when you, and even within the Asante society, peace is the goal that everyone, but when you look at it, everyone in the world really wants peace, right? The problem is, people, we don't know what peace is, right? We don't, and since we don't know what it is, we don't know when we have it or when we don't have it. Most people believe that peace is not having to deal with an issue of challenge, right? If I can just get rid of this job, or if I can get rid of this husband, or if I can get rid of this wife, or if I don't have to deal with that knuckleheaded child of mine, I'll be at peace. But no, peace is not something that comes from outside of us or is removed from outside of us. Peace is something that we bring from within. I mean, it's the response that we have to the quote-unquote challenges or opportunities that we face in life. And piece is the reflection of our divinity. You know, that's why peace in with the highest law is called Amen within the comedic system. Now, Amen being peace says that regardless of what else is going on around me, I understand that my true nature is one of peace, and that no matter what I'm confronted with, I have to, peace is my only natural response to that situation. So I look like God when I respond, no matter what the circumstance is, in a peaceful way. Mm-hmm. If I understand that I am one with all, right, there's only one God, only one consciousness that manifests itself through all things, then I understand that peace is the understanding that there's nothing that's against me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I understand that what the world may project, the world may see as an opposition, is really not an opposition, but an opportunity, then I'm functioning as God in the world. Right? I know that I am not to be. You are not my enemy. That I have no enemy.
Mm-hmm.
We are complementary in that whatever the challenge, quote unquote, you might bring to me, I'm receiving that challenge as an opportunity for me to manifest the peace, which is my true nature.
Mm-hmm.
So everything in life gives us the opportunity to manifest our divinity. All the circumstances and situations we confront with in life. So each of these 11 laws give us the model for how we respond in whatever the situation is. And if I respond as such, then I'm manifesting, I'm reflecting, I'm being as God in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if I don't have these models as my guide, then, quote unquote, my spirituality is going to be not reflective of a divine renaissance, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
because I'm not going to know how to and why I should respond to this, quote-unquote, opportunity, this challenge in this way. So I'm going to believe that, you know, someone is doing something against me, which is another possibility because there's only one consciousness in the world. How can God be against itself?
Everybody, my special guest is Orwa Hehi Metara in Comet. Excuse me. We still have a few moments left. I see the lines are lit up over here, Orwa. People, they heard the word that you were coming on today, and they have responded. If you would like to ask a question, and you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1, and then I can bring you on board, and you can ask your question or make your comment. If you're listening online, the telephone number is 347-324-5727. Again, that's 347-324-5727. Again, if you're already on the phone, all you have to do is press 1, and I'll bring you on board. This is a very, very powerful interview, and the information that you're sharing today, as with the other shows that you've done, is extremely powerful, and I just want everybody to know you heard Brother Orwa mention the 11 laws of God. He did a series, on the 11 laws of God. I was fortunate enough to interview him during that series, and that series is in the archives. So if you happen to miss that, okay, you can actually go back, just scroll down. It's titled The 11 Laws of God, and then it will show the particular faculty that he was discussing that day. So definitely go back and check that out. Brother Orwa, and the role of family. Okay, you talked about the role of the elders. The role of family, then, as it relates to the social aspect that we're looking at today, again, with everybody's bottom line being they came here to realize their divinity, then the role of family. Could you discuss that? And because we already know the end result is that we're supposed to be realizing our divinity, then what is the role of family then? Because then you touched upon it even from the Asante perspective, how you could see somebody that you've never even met, and that person could relate to you as family, because you look at stuff that's going on over here in contrast to the principles that we're discussing today. I mean, you just take a city like Chicago and all of the stuff that's going on in Chicago with, I mean, just the deaths and the shooting, not just Chicago, but I mean, that is a extreme manifestation of a lack of a system that's in place that people are adhering to that would prevent that type of expression.
Well, the bottom line is family is the role of family is provide a vehicle, the opportunity for its members to cultivate, grow, and develop and awaken their divinity. Now, through a part of that process is, you know, everyone has to live in the world. In order to live in the world, you have to have a means to support yourself, support your family, et cetera. So providing those opportunities, supporting the individual's, quote-unquote, mind, body, and spirit as they grow. But from the proper perspective, we understand that what we call the mind is a part of the spirit. What we call the body is a part of the spirit. And what we call the spirit is the spirit. So it's about spiritually providing the cultivation necessary for a person to become the divine being that they need to become. So it becomes an infrastructural on one level. And see, this is why it's important for people, families to come together. Because, you know, it's a society that nurtures everyone, the families. Let me rephrase it. It would be very hard for me as an individual to be the only one trying to practice these concepts and values and teach my children these things, because they're not going to spend 24 hours with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we come together and create society to provide the infrastructure so that each and every person can be nurtured and protected and guided to manifest these qualities that we're aspiring to. But we live in the reason why we have the chaos and confusion that we have within our communities today is because we truly have no social structure. We have really no community. The word community, when you break it, when you look at the word, it means a common unity.
Mm.
And that's what indigenous societies had. They had the Asante had a common goal. This is how each person was supposed to purport themselves. These are the qualities, these are the behaviors, the attitudes, the expressions, etc. And within a closed community, then you can support one another to recognize and realize that. So we're not going to become, quote unquote, the world is not going to be any better. Our societies are not going to be any better. Our nations are not going to be any better. And unless and until we as individuals begin to come together around a common core of values that will promote the ultimate awakening of the divine parts of our spirit, which is why the initiation process is so important. You know, the critical piece to initiation is that you need someone to initiate you. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't initiate yourself.
Right, right.
So if you're not willing to submit and be guided, then you're not going to be able to achieve the goal that you seek to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to subjugate, to really recognize. You know, we talked in the first class, first interview, I guess that's a proper term.
Class works for me.
About how the Asante Nation came together, where you had these men who were equals, who were willing to subjugate their own interests for the interests of a collective, to make one of their number the first among equals. which meant that they gave up something, but they got something. And so each of us has to be willing to fall within of this structure, and that's why the kingship system has been so important and valuable historically to African people, because it gave people the ability and the tools and the elements and the structure through which people can develop and become the God men or God women that they were reflective of. The divine kingship meant that we are all aspiring and supportive of the divine within man, the divine within our community. And until we get to that understanding, that point, and recognize that, you know, I can't believe in God, I have to become God, I have to awaken the God within me, then that's what's going to make things better. You know, a lot more people today in Asante are believing in God. We gave the statistics, you know, last week or so, quote unquote, using the Christian model. But the society is no better off than it was 50 years ago when people didn't, quote, believe in God, but they were aspiring to become a divine being. They were practicing their Nyame Su. They were practicing their soul washing that we discussed in previous interviews. So, you know, these are the elements that we need to reestablish and put back in place within our communities, within our families, within our, and coming together as societies, societies within communities, and begin promoting so that each of us has the support system necessary to allow for those that are coming behind us to have the tools necessary to awaken their divinity, have the process there that they can use to strive for to become the God man or the God woman that each of us is destined to be.
You know, Brother Orwell, there's some people that want to talk to you, so I'm going to call the last four digits of your telephone number, and I'm going to go with who's been holding on the longest, and then I'll bring you on board, and you can ask your question and make your comment. 3277, I'm coming to you right now.
Okay, let's see.
3277, you're on the air with Orwell Hehi Metura and Comment. Welcome to Health, Wealth, and Divine.
Yeah, hello.
Etapu.
Etapu, how are you?
Excellent.
You're
on the air.
Dwau, finally I'm excited to know that the airwaves are actually being used to teach spirituality. I'm very, very excited about the show tonight. And I'd like to ask Orwell a question about the role of women under the divine kingship. Usually in the Western world, you know, we have this struggle of women to achieve rights. And is that the same on the divine kingship? How does that work out? Because I know under the Ashanti and the ancient Egyptian model that we have women rising to the highest office in the land, spiritual and mundane. Can you touch a little about that?
Well, yes. As we discussed, I think we discussed it last week or week before, I don't remember, that the social structure, the political organizational structure, has a parallel system. For every position that where you have a man, there's a corresponding female. So you have the male who's the head of the family lineage, and then you have the female head of the family lineage. So there's always this duality. There's the king, and then there's the queen mother of the nation. And the queen mother, as we discussed before, is the one who is responsible for choosing who the king should be in terms of representing the people. So not only do the women have corresponding positions, but they also have, but it's not figurehead positions. They're talking about true autonomy, true authority, and in many cases, even within ancient Kemet, there was situations in ancient Asante. Well, when I talk about ancient Asante, I'm talking about a couple of years, 100 years ago, before colonial period, there was even periods where if there was no man capable or qualified to lead the nation, that women assumed that position. So you don't have, in traditional African societies, especially in those that are matrilineal in the organization. You don't have the kinds of patriarchal and chauvinistic practices and tendencies that we find in Western culture. You know, that women are fighting for rights. Women are given rights by their divinity, by their nature. Because it's from the woman that man comes into the world. So the understanding that the king comes from the woman is just an extension of the basic biological fact that for there to be a man, there has to be a woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me, I'm going to pull him back up because I just put him on pause. Okay. Did you have another question, brother? 3277, you still there? Okay. Well, let me go to my next call.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Did you have another question? Well, first, are you good? I know we went over the time a little bit. Over.
Two.
Yes.
Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry, brother. Did you have another question? 3277. Okay. Okay, I'm coming to 7082. Let's see. 7082, you're on the air with Orwa Hehi Metoron Comet. Welcome to Health, Wealth, and Divine. 7082. Let me try that one more time. 7082, you're on the air with Orwa Hehi Metoron Comet. Okay, Brother Orwa, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Had a few callers there. The first caller, you answered this question, definitely. Okay, let me come back to that one. Okay, 7082, are you there? Okay, they're not there. Okay, I want to thank you very much, Brother Orwa, for this interview. It's been awesome. I think that, again, just even the role, the brother had an awesome question just concerning the role of women. And even if, because when we look at how just even in the music over here now, the music, I mean, just depicts women in the worst possible ways. And just, again, there is a system in place. Again, as we discussing ancient, when we look at the Asante and even the present day Asante that are practicing these principles, you don't have to go to Africa to actually find the system that is practicing the ancient traditions of the Asante and other African indigenous cultures. There's a system here in the United States. Could you talk about you mentioned at the top of the hour how the Osaroset Society came into contact with the kingship in Ghana. Could you talk about the Osaroset Society momentarily for those who might be listening, and this might be what they're looking for, and are looking for a system that practices these principles that leading with the end in mind being one's divinity. Could you talk about that?
Okay. You're, I don't know if it's your connection or mine, but you're breaking up.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I hope it's not me.
Okay. I hear you clearly.
Okay, good. Well, as we said earlier on, the Osaroset Society was organized and developed by Shechem Shechem Ron Nefrat Men I, who's the author of the Medunater series, which is the premier series on Kemetic spirituality in today's world. And the system is, in essence, designed to give us the historical, cultural, social, philosophical underpinnings of the ancient Kemetic society, but even more importantly, give us the opportunity, the tools, and the vehicles where we can begin to study, learn, and apply these ideals into our lives so we can begin to transform our own lives, moving them toward the divine beings that we are destined to mm-hmm. be. And as each of us works toward awakening divinity within us, then we make the world just a little bit better. And mm-hmm. the more people that make that commitment, make that movement, then if we want to change the world, then we got to change the people in the world. And you can't change the people in the world by doing the same thing that the people in the world are doing. You know, it's like the old thing about how do you know if a person's insane because they keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting mm-hmm. a different result.
Right.
You know, our ancestors put in place, and we have the historical record to show that they put in place a system which allowed and certified that men and women of all ranks and all strata of society were able to be proclaimed by their peers as divine men and divine women. And that's the kind of world that we need to bring back. We have to bring God back into the world. You know, there's a big philosophical debate about is God alive or is God dead? Well, the answer is yes. So we got to decide, well, which part of the answer do you want to be on? Do you want to be on the dead side of God or the alive side of God?
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to awaken God, then we have to function as God. We have to become God men and God women. And that allows God to function and flow through its creation as is the goal. You know, that thing about as above, so below, or on mm-hmm. earth as in heaven.
Yes.
Well, on earth, if heaven is divine, then earth should be divine. If God mm-hmm. dwells in heaven, then God must dwell in earth.
Mm-hmm.
If God dwells on earth, God dwells through the purpose of creation to provide the vehicles through which God can experience itself in a multiplicity of ways. We may maintain the unification of his being.
You know, I wanna try this number one more time. Somebody's sitting up there, they keep pressing the light, so let me try it again. Okay, I'm gonna come back to you. 70 Oh, okay, no, let me take that back. Okay, yeah, 7082. 7082, are you there? 7082. Okay, there you go. All right. Everybody, I want to thank you for your time. This has been an awesome, awesome interview. I just want to make sure that Brother Orwa, was there anything else concerning the social model that we did not cover that you wanted to cover? Because if you're good, you're good with me. Was there any other aspect of the social model that you wanted to touch upon?
Well, I mean, there's so much, but the critical piece is the education. You know,
mm-hmm.
you don't become a doctor without being trained how to be a doctor. You don't become a divine being without being trained how to be a divine being. You don't
mm-hmm.
become a member of a harmonious society without being trained how to become a member of a human society. So the training that was the indigenous, traditional training that individuals went through within within the Santé society was what enabled them to grow and develop and promote the peace and harmony that was the goal of the society itself. So
mm-hmm.
that's where we go back to the initiation process. You know, initiation is what the Assyrian initiation and the Ra initiation is a process through which we can begin to make the transformations within our own character, within our own spirit, to become the vehicles toward awakening that divinity. So for people interested in that process, they can go to Taui, that's T-A-U-I .com, and Google that, and there's a process for the initiation system that can be taken online. You don't have to necessarily be resident within an area of the world where our society has a functioning group. But you can do it online. We have hundreds of people who do the initiation in different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the most important point of the annual cycle, the winter solstice, is approaching. And so people can gain insight in terms of how to begin the process are making this divine transformation through the solstice period at the areas in which we're located. Like, for example, we're starting our classes on the solstice activities this weekend in D.C. I think New York started theirs a couple weeks ago. But they can also, people can also go to Tawi and get that process online, right? So, you know, if I'm interested, if a person is interested in looking to awaken, to apply these valuable African principles into their lives, then we have a system, a process in place to guide the person, to help the person make those changes, make the transformation. So we encourage everyone who's interested to follow up and get engaged and get involved, and, you know, just transform that image that we see in the mirror from the human into the divine.
You know, brother, you mentioned the workshop that's going to start this weekend in Washington. Could you give a number for those people that might be in that area that might want to come out and, you know, they might need to know the time and address and so forth? Could you give a telephone number?
Well, the telephone number is 202-723-5566.
Okay. And the address there for those who...
Yeah. 6224 3rd Street Northwest in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
It's
by
5
the way,
o'clock.
Everybody,
5
concerning the workshop, that's going to be this Saturday. Again, the telephone number there is 202-723-5566 for more information. Tomorrow, actually, Thursday, December the 3rd, make sure that you tune in to Health, Wealth, and Divine at 7 p.m., from 7 to 8 p.m., I'm going to be interviewing concerning the preparation for the winter solstice. Shekemt Sa'anktaku Nenebu is going to be my special guest tomorrow, and that's, again, Thursday, December the 3rd, from 7 to 8 p.m. We're going to be discussing preparing for the winter solstice. As Brother Orwa said, this is the time of year where you really want to, if you've ever thought about initiation, this is the time to do it. This is the time to plant those seeds. So you want to know what it is and, you know, what you need to do to prepare for it and get all the information concerning it. So make sure you tune in tomorrow from 7 to 8 p.m. My special guest is going to be Shekemt Sa'anktaku Nenebu, and we're going to be discussing preparing for the winter solstice. Also, this Friday, December the 4th, from 7 to 8 p.m., you don't want to miss this show. I can tell you, just judging from the archives, I can tell how many people are listening. You all are loving this information. My brother, Shekem Metaunetta, is going to be back. We're doing a series on five element balancing Qigong. You all are loving it, I can tell. Last week, we discussed the lung, large intestine, and tomorrow, we're going to finish up on the lung, large intestine, and also discuss the heart, small intestine. Okay, so you don't want to miss that. Okay, again, these shows are archived. So if you missed Shekem Metaunetta's overview, that's also in the archives. And again, if you missed last week's show, then you want to go back and listen to that as well. So tomorrow we're going to be discussing finishing up on the lung, large intestine, and we're going to begin the process of discussing the heart, small intestine. So that's tomorrow. I'm sorry, that's Friday. Tomorrow is the show with Shekem Sa'anktaku Nenebu. We're going to be discussing the preparation for the winter solstice. But this Friday, we're going to be discussing the five element balancing Qigong. You don't want to miss that. Everybody, this show was awesome. Brother Orwa, I want to thank you so much, my brother. I knew the show was going to be fabulous, and I'm sure that the listeners have learned an awful lot just concerning the Asante model. Which aspect did you want to discuss next week?
Economics.
Economics. Everybody, that's next Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. A special guest is going to be Orwa Hehi Metarayan Comet. We're going to be discussing economics as it relates to the Asante model and how we can benefit and glean from that information. Brother Orwa, awesome, awesome show. Any final remarks, my brother?
No, just thank you again for the forum and the opportunity to share and continue to nourish my brain with this information.
Well, you're nourishing ours, my brother. So I thank you, Tuau, and to all of the Orwas and Shechems in the Osereset Society. Again, I want to thank you for all of the work that you do. Of course, to Shechem and Shechem, Raul Nefer, Amen, and to, you know, everybody that spreads this information. Again, I want to encourage everybody to spread this information. If you're listening, then, I mean, there's somebody that you know that is just like you that wants to hear it. And the way that we're going to make this better is if we can get this information out to people and we can get people to understand that, hey, you are divine. Again, for those of you who don't know of an Osereset Society in your city, or if there's one near you, can you give the main number, I guess, would be for people to call to find out if there is a group in their area, Brother Orwa?
718-469-3199.
Okay. That's 718-469-3199. Brother Orwa, until the next time, my brother, thank you so much, and I look forward to our next show next Wednesday.
Excellent. Take care.
All right. Take care. Everybody, it was Orwa Hehi Metura and Comet Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osereset Society. We are discussing the Asante model, and we're looking at that model and looking at the different aspects of that model and seeing what we can glean from it to help us in our quest to become divine beings, realizing our divinity here and now. I really appreciate everybody. Thank you so much for your time. My name is Juwanza. You're listening to Health, Wealth, and Divine. Until the next time.